Welcome to the podcast series from the specialists at Penn Medicine. I'm Melanie Cole, and today we're discussing peripheral artery disease with Dr. Elizabeth Ann Genovese. She's a board-certified vascular surgeon, an assistant professor of surgery at the University of Pennsylvania, and the director of the Penn Advanced Limb Preservation Program at the Hospital of the University of Pennsylvania. Dr. Genovese, thank you so much for joining us today. I'd like you to start by giving us a little bit of an overview for other providers about peripheral artery disease, or PAD, P-A-D, and its end-stage manifestation, chronic limb-threatening ischemia, or CLTI. Tell us a little bit about these conditions, who they affect, and why do they occur?
Yeah, so peripheral arterial disease is very common in our greater community of Philadelphia, and essentially it's any kind of level of stenosis or full complete arterial blockage causing decreased perfusion to the lower extremities. So it can be at the level of the arterial tree in the abdomen all the way to below the inguinal ligament, either above or below the knee. And what we see is that the patients at highest risk for peripheral arterial disease, or PAD, tends to be patients over the age of 50. And they often have comorbidities you think of with coronary artery disease or cerebrovascular disease. So hypertension, hyperlipidemia, diabetes, and particularly either some renal insufficiency or full-on end-stage renal insufficiency, renal disease, all contributing to atherosclerotic disease and progressive occlusion. We often see that this affects men at a little bit of an earlier age and women at a little bit of an older age, but really an equal distribution between men and women. Often women are a little bit more prominent in the older age patient population. So the same patient population we're thinking about with coronary disease, carotid disease, patients who are at risk of stroke, same patient population.
Thank you for that overview. And while we're in that realm there, the initial presentation of PAD is often prompted by claudication, pain in the legs. Are there ways to detect it before this point in asymptomatic people? Is there something that would signal walking difficulties, limiting factors?
Yeah, absolutely. When we look at PAD, there is a continuum of symptoms that we see. So the first patient population is going to be our asymptomatic patient population. So they'll either have some screening test or a physical exam where maybe you can't feel the pulses in the foot. However, they have no symptoms. It doesn't hurt when they walk. They don't have any pain in their feet. They have no wounds. In those patients, it's important to actually identify PAD because it is a cardiovascular risk factor, and it signals importance in risk factor modification. So first and foremost, smoking cessation, diabetes control, anti-lipid and antiplatelet medications. Then the next step in this continuum is going to be often claudication. Not everyone is going to actually go next to claudication, but a fair majority of patients will describe claudication, which is essentially a very predictive amount of exercise resulting in cramping in a certain muscular bed. And that muscular bed is usually the one just distal to the area of the occlusion or the stenosis. So if people have aortoiliac occlusive disease, they may complain of cramping in their buttock or in their thighs. If they have more disease in their femoral or popliteal arteries, they'll complain of calf cramping when they walk. And people can be mixed pictures, right? You can have multi-level disease, but typically it is I start to do an exercise, 5 minutes into it, I notice I have this cramping, and then it's relieved when I stop after a couple minutes, and then I start walking again, and this happens again. Now, when people have blockages that are just below the knee, and it's kind of isolated tibial disease, so we see this in patients with diabetes, renal insufficiency, sometimes they don't claudicate because there's really not a muscular bed below those blockages to cause pain with exercise. So sometimes people will go from asymptomatic to the next thing they complain about is just pain in their foot or tissue loss. So typically what they'll say with regards to rest pain is, when I'm just laying at night and my leg is at the level of my heart in bed, my forefoot throbs, it aches, I dangle it off the bed and it feels better. Or they may say, I have this wound on my foot that hasn't healed in a couple weeks despite taking care of it. The rest pain and the tissue loss is a little bit more of that end stage of peripheral vascular disease. And that's the patient population that's really at risk of limb loss once they hit that diagnosis.
Interestingly enough, and over the years, exercise remains a challenging course for patients with PAD, as it is such a limiting factor. They want to do it. It's good for them. We know that. But then as you described, it can be quite painful. And we'll get into that a little bit more. But before we discuss the Penn Advanced Limb Preservation Program or the PALP program at Penn Medicine and its treatment options, can you discuss a few terms? Critical limb ischemia was replaced by chronic limb-threatening ischemia. Can you speak just a little bit about why this happened?
Absolutely. So approximately 2 years ago, there was a multi-societal guidelines that came out called the Global Vascular Guidelines that really looked at PAD and our end-stage patient population, the critical limb ischemia patients, as it is traditionally known as. And this has, again, always been the patients with rest pain and tissue loss. And the initial thought behind the terminology critical limb ischemia came from years ago, over 20 years ago, where a lot of the disease that came with peripheral arterial disease was secondary to smoking. And there was this idea that there was a certain kind of threshold that patients had with regards to their arterial perfusion. And once they passed that threshold, then they were at risk of losing their limb. What we see now in our more modern patient population is while smoking still plays a very strong and important risk factor for developing PAD, there is this high prevalence of concomitant poorly controlled diabetes. So now people are at risk of losing their limb, not only because of arterial insufficiency, but the other factors that come along with having diabetes, such as neuropathy, conformational changes in the foot, poor wound healing due to the diabetes and the local microbiome that we see in the foot. And so we've changed our thinking to get rid of the idea of a certain threshold, a certain cutoff of arterial perfusion, now to more the global picture of looking at patients and changing the terminology to chronic limb-threatening ischemia, meaning we know there's underlying arterial insufficiency, we have perfusion defects to the foot, but that there are a variety of things that not only contribute to the risk of limb loss, but that we also need to very actively address in order to be a comprehensive program and providers to allow for limb salvage.
So tell us a little bit about the PALP program at the Hospital of the University of Pennsylvania. Give us a little bit of your team overview, the multidisciplinary goals of the program. Tell us a little bit about it.
This is a really exciting program that we've created here that's very unique to HUP. We have developed over the past year a really nice foundation of a multidisciplinary program. And so what this is allowing us to do is approach patients from every facet of their medical care in order to optimize their ability to wound heal. So we have worked with particularly podiatry here at HUP, and we perform multidisciplinary rounds where every patient that we have that coincide with each other, we talk about in a multidisciplinary fashion. We have developed antibiotic pathways and guidelines, specifically with the antibiotic stewardship program here at HUP, to not only develop empiric antibiotic pathways when patients come in with foot infections or wounds, but also empiric pathways to kind of guide our antibiotics once the patient is leaving the hospital, to not only optimize specific coverage, but also to minimize the overuse of antibiotics at an outpatient level. When we're doing this, we're involving not only vascular surgery, podiatry, infectious disease, but we're also working with other ancillary service lines that we traditionally think of. So the cardiovascular medicine or cardiology to make sure we're optimizing their hypertension and their lipid management while they're an inpatient in the hospital. We're working very closely with diabetes and endocrine to make sure their glucoses are well controlled. So we're trying to take a very holistic and multidisciplinary approach while we have these patients as a captive audience in the inpatient to really set them up for success once they are discharged.
What a comprehensive program. And PAD has several stages. Dr. Genovese, with chronic limb threatening ischemia or CLTI is the final step. often before amputation. What marks the demarcation between those stages? Why is the disease so often progressive despite the management that you were just discussing? Can reocclusion or the other sequelae be prevented?
This is a tough disease process. And so there's a lot of things that contribute to the development of PAD. And once we've gotten there, once patients are symptomatic in one form or another, there's been years and years of disease pathology and atherosclerosis that has led to this point. The demarcation from claudication to chronic limb-threatening ischemia really is the difference between it hurts when I walk versus I have rest pain or I have wounds or tissue loss. Once you go transition from rest pain in the foot or tissue loss, whether it's gangrene, an ulcer, a wound that doesn't heal, patients are at a 20 to 25% risk of limb loss in the first year and mortality in the first year. So it's a very morbid disease process. When we start talking about optimizing patients and reducing reocclusion, reintervention, it's really about risk factor modification, which is why this multidisciplinary approach is so incredibly important. So once we intervene, improve perfusion to the foot, do the whatever podiatric work that needs to be done, put people on the right antibiotics, close adherent follow-up in clinic in order to make sure the wounds are progressing in the appropriate manner, close surveillance of the intervention is critical, but also the risk factor modification. So smoking cessation is always number one on our list of what we're approaching with patients. But again, also making sure those other risk factors that led to this disease process is also modified and optimized as much as possible, not only in the hospital, but once patients leave the hospital and they're in the outpatient setting.
How do you define success in amputation-free survival? Speak about that a little bit.
I think what we all look at with success in this field is avoiding major limb loss. There are some patients who amputation may be the ultimate goal for them. Either it's because their tissue loss or their gangrene is far too extensive and there really isn't a salvageable limb at that point, or their comorbidities may be so advanced, or the patient may be so frail that putting them through a revascularization or multiple intervention really isn't in their best interest. That is a slimmer patient population that we see who have chronic limb-threatening ischemia. But outside of that patient population, really our terms of success is avoiding major limb loss. And so in that effect, it usually often includes some sort of revascularization procedure, whether it's an open surgical bypass or advanced endovascular techniques in conjunction with either wound debridements or potentially some minor amputations, 4-foot amputations. Those are all considered success because what we're just trying to avoid is a below the knee or an above the knee amputation. Because in this specific patient population, the rate of ambulation and independence after a major limb loss can be anywhere from 20 to 60%, depending on, you know, how a patient is presenting initially. So that's what we're trying to avoid. And that is really our marker of success.
And as you've told us that there are some patients, as you've just described, for whom no option is the answer. Who are these patients and why are they considered to have no options for treatment? When does it get to that point?
A no option CLTI patient population is a term that people will often start hearing. We've really been using it in the past year to 2 years. And there's two kind of buckets of patients who are quote unquote no option, meaning we don't have anything to offer them with regards to limb salvage. So the first bucket is that patient population I was just talking about, really severe comorbidities, extreme frailty, or extensive tissue loss. These are patients who ultimately we can't offer them things because they're really, we will either hurt them as a whole in trying to offer them something, or there's just no salvageable limb left due to the tissue loss. There's another bucket, though, of no option CLTI patients that really are describing a disease pattern of arterial occlusion that traditionally we haven't had surgical or endovascular options for. So this is a patient population where we've really had arterial blockages in the smallest vessels in the foot. So if we 10 years ago, 15 years ago, looked at the disease distribution of arterial occlusions, we would know there would be fempop occlusions, we would know there's tibial occlusions, but typically there was always some reconstitution of the arteries at the level of the ankle in the foot. And what allows us to deal with that is we can either bypass to those reconstituted blood vessels or try to perform angioplasty or stenting to get blood flow directly to those reconstituted blood vessels in the foot. Now, with diabetes, renal insufficiency, and end-stage renal disease being so rampant, it's really attacking and occluding these smaller blood vessels. So we will see patients have flow in their aortoiliac system, they have it in their fempop system, and then we start to see some disease in their tibials, but then we have nothing that comes back in the foot. And traditionally, if you don't have a blood vessel that reconstitutes in the foot, we don't have any target for a bypass or for an endovascular procedure. So this is that no option patient population that we've developed some new techniques to bring blood flow to the foot in the absence of arterial targets in the foot.
This is a fascinating conversation. Dr. Genovese, and you're currently participating in a clinical trial of a device designed for the no option population known as LimFlow system. Explain a little bit about the system's novel approach in no options critical limb ischemia. Tell us a little bit about how it's different than arterial bypass surgery and what advantages it has.
Yes, absolutely. So the wonderful thing about the PALP program here at HUP is that we have access to a number of clinical trials where we get access to the latest and the greatest upcoming technology, particularly with regards to infrainguinal occlusive disease. The LimFlow system is designed specifically for this no-option CLTI patient population that lacks an arterial target in the foot. So these are patients who we can't bypass because we have no target to plug into. We can't perform an endovascular revascularization because there's just, again, no target in the foot. So the LimFlow system, which we're a part of with PROMISE 3, is a system where we perform a deep venous arterialization. So the general concept is instead of bringing blood flow into the foot through the arteries, we're utilizing the venous system in the foot to perfuse the tissue. So what does that mean? We're actually perfusing the venous network through the arterial system. So the LimFlow system is a novel group of technologies where we perform this deep venous arterialization. So we create a crossover point from the arteries below the knee directly into the veins below the knee. We modify the valves in the vein and we place a covered stent in order to directly perfuse the foot through the venous system. And so over time, over a 1 month to 6 week period, we really create this very robust network of flow in the foot through the veins, through neovascularization in order to perfuse the tissues in the foot without through the venous system itself and not through the arterial system.
Dr. Genovese, as we wrap up, how can people with questions about everything we've discussed here today, PAD, CLTI, or the LimFlow study, contact the PALP program at the Hospital of the University of Pennsylvania and summarize everything, what you would like other providers to take away from this fascinating conversation today?
I'm very proud of what we've developed in such a short time here. We live in a community where there are some of the highest rates of amputation and limb loss in the country. And we're really trying to create a program that is going to not only treat people with the most advanced technologies and provide the highest level of vascular care, but to look at patients in a comprehensive way so that we are setting them up for success once they leave the hospital and we're minimizing their risk factors and trying to prevent further issues down the road. I have great partners here in the podiatric realm, in the infectious disease realm, in the cardiology realm, who are all very, very dedicated to treating this patient population, and it is a fantastic team. We can always be contacted. We have a PALP hotline number, which is 215-662 4748, or I can always be directly contacted through email, and I can always help guide people in either through the inpatient system or through our outpatient system, whatever kind of works best for patients to get in, whatever touch point is easier for those patients. But it's a really wonderful program with a lot of people very dedicated to treating and optimizing this patient population.
Thank you so much, Dr. Genovese, for such an engaging conversation. To refer your patient to Dr. Genovese at Penn Medicine, please call our 24/7 provider-only line at 877-937-PENN, or you can submit your referral via our secure online referral form by visiting our website at pennmedicine.org/referyourpatient. That concludes this episode from the specialists at Penn Medicine. I'm Melanie Cole.